last wisdom, in case we get too forgetful, is if it takes place in time and space, look closer. Think it through in the soul realm first, to take it out of the illusion. Now we're all going back into time and space. Some will hold on to a few facts, and I think it's possible to eclipse the concept of being a mortal being in a material body. I think it's possible to be aware of the fact that while you're in time, you are non-existent. While you're in time, whatever you do, no matter how it appears to you, it is of no value. You'll have to swallow that, chew it, and look at it, and chew it again, and realize that if it is not out of time, it is not of value. Now, I don't know how you're going to do that, because you've got 24 hours of time that you live in, swim in the illusion throughout the day and night. And you think that I'm doing better now, I've got more understanding now, I'm making progress, and yet it's all illusion. There's no progress in time. Now what are you going to do about that? How can we talk to each other, meditate with each other, and learn that in time nothing we do is of importance, and then go right on doing it? How do we face that? So I'm going to have a meditation with you now on getting out of time and staying there for a length of time, until a part of you comes into the experience of the Spirit of God, which is timeless, until a part of you feels the resurgence of energy, the absence of any mortality, the absence of a me that can stumble, and of a me that can make errors, and of a me that can make mistakes, such as thinking because this was a wonderful day and I had wonderful experiences, that I'm on the right track. The only right track is going to be the knowledge that I have lived in the Spirit of God as myself. That Spirit of God which frees me from the mortal illusion. I have touched it for a minute. I have touched it for an hour. I will touch it this week, all day. I will find that Spirit to live in, to not think in it, to receive from the Father that guidance which is indispensable to the experience of being the living Son of God. Not in time. Where can the Son of God be in time? Not even in space, but in the kingdom of my Father, in the timeless, spaceless kingdom of eternity. And you can be in eternity in a moment. You are in eternity the moment you are the realized Spirit of God. It's no journey. You don't have to pick yourself up and go there. You have to be the Spirit of God, and you are in eternity. How often a day do you find yourself in eternity? How often do you try to live in eternity? How often do you ask yourself, am I Joe Smith? Am I Mary Jones? Or am I the Spirit? And why am I not the Spirit? Do I have human responsibilities? How can I better fill them than being the Spirit of God? Each one of us is a committee of one to look at the world of effect, to look at the world of ugliness and war, to look at all the things that make up the opposites of the world we still are in, and see that the only one who will change that will have to be you. You are the sole reason that Spirit is on the earth. It comes to the earth, and it comes out into visibility in this world when you acknowledge it. When you acknowledge that the Spirit of the Lord is who I am, and thou seest me, thou seest the Spirit. Every moment of courage that you display to confess to spiritual integrity, to spiritual life, is a victory which will place you in the forefront of the movement from matter to spirit, which now is the principle activity of those who know that they are going forward. They're not going to cite little rules to live by, rules of conduct. They're not going to tell people how to act with each other. They're going to live as the Spirit, because that says everything I want to say. How will you do this? You go to the grocery store, you buy a package of something or other, and you go home with it. How will that be converted into a spiritual activity? You go to the office, you do other chores. You've got to convert that to a spiritual activity. Your children come home from school, They've either done something you like or they've done something you didn't like. How can we convert that into a spiritual activity? How can those children say, there's something different about my mom? I don't know what it is, but I like it. There's something different about my dad. He's not like the other men. He's doing something different. Are we making the turn for those to follow us? That's the responsibility we face. And if we have to give an entire lifetime to making that turn, that's something that we should feel the privilege of doing. For there's nothing more rewarding than walking in the footsteps of the Father. Now, what was different about Jesus? He could face any challenge and face it with the certainty that whatever he did, he was doing the Father's will, and that therefore he was doing what was right. He faced death on numerous occasions. There was nothing to fear. He was in the Father's kingdom doing right. He faced people who objected to what he said, what he did. But he faced them. He knew what was right. Do you? Are you willing to face any situation and do what you have to do in a knowledge that it is a divine activity and you must do it? We ought to be an influence in the world. We're not crawling through it and hiding. Now let's say what it's like to be spiritual, to live spiritually, to refuse to live any other way. And the first step of it is to acknowledge Spirit as the only presence around you. I'm sorry, I can't have a conversation with you while you act mortal, because that's not who you are. Why pretend? Be what you are. And so you're converting everyone to Spirit. That's your attitude. You can't reprimand them publicly, but that's your attitude. You convey this in your manner. You are Spirit, and I will not converse with you as matter, because I know who you are. And if we can't converse, we won't. But if you're matter, the next moment you'll be dead matter, or sick matter, some kind of matter that isn't working correctly, and I expect my friends to be living Spirit. So you've got standards, and there's one standard that you uphold. They must be Spirit, and I must be Spirit, no matter what they look like. Now, what are the qualities of Spirit? You don't think this friend is very intelligent. Well, that's because you're not seeing him as a Spirit. He's all wise. And if you don't know that he's all wise, how can you accept him as Spirit? How can you lift him up with a knowledge that he is Spirit? So now you're talking to everybody you know, and you're saying to yourself, this waitress is the Spirit of God. This shoemaker is the Spirit of God. This salesman is the Spirit of God. And I am lifting them up because I will not accept them in a material way. takes a lot of effort. And after the first 20 minutes, you'll give up. You say, oh, well, I can't hold on to that. And yet you will hold on, because you will quickly see that in holding them in the spirit, you are holding yourself there too. And that's how you become spiritually acclimated. It's very difficult to make the swing from matter to spirit. But once you begin with everyone you see, and you hold them all in the invisible light. They won't even know it. But that's your job. And that job was given to you by the Father. Do not hide your light under a bushel. Don't go around in the material world and bury yourself in matter, as if you were one of them. No, you're not one of them. You're one in the spirit, and they are not who they appear to be. So you're an influence, and you've got to accept being an influence. You've got to try it for a week, seeing everyone in the light. Now, while you're seeing them in the light, you'll know when you're not seeing them in the light, and it's up to you to make a change. The moment you are agreeing with him about his problems, his physical ailments, whatever his problems may be, you are not in the light. You're not seeing him in the light. You've drawn a shade. You are commiserating. You said, well, let's get out of spirit now and let's work on our problems. What's happening? We don't want to stumble. We don't want to fall by the wayside. We don't want to walk with a fellow who can't travel in spirit. But we can tell him we're lifting him in spirit. It's our job to do it in a way that no one knows. Your motivation will be unknown to the person you're lifting. But your real motivation is that you want to act as the Spirit of God yourself. Now, I don't find many people doing this, or many people aware that it must be done. That's how we're going to turn the world around. You're going to turn your share of the world around. I'm going to turn my share. And while we do it, we will be changing ourselves into the divine image and likeness. I tell you, it's hard work. I know it's hard. What's wrong with hard work? Easy work is no more fun. We've got a job to do. And the job is to live in the spirit. And everyone has to help another. If your wife is ahead of you in the spirit, it's her job to lift you. If your child is ahead of you in the spirit, it's his job to lift you. If you're ahead of someone else, it's your job to lift them. I don't care how you do it. You can learn one way to do it, and if it doesn't work, you learn another way. But every day, in every way, you are lifting this human world out of humanhood. That's a task. And I'm sure that as you try it for a week, you'll certainly stumble a lot, but you'll be much better for it. Much better. You'll find you have the capacity to lift yourself better. because we all fall into an easy way. Well, I won't try to do this for a while, it just feels better. There's no effort. I just go along. Let's put the effort forth. Let's be determined. Some people I know have gone so far as to keep a diary. In the diary they list what my objectives for the week are, my spiritual objectives. At the end of the week they consult the diary. Fortunately, sometimes they find that they made progress. But it's written down. What they accomplish is recorded, and if they make progress, and then make more progress, and then more progress, it is not a long time before they find they have succeeded in moving away from a certain stubbornness in spiritual awareness, which has prevented them from finding the freedom and the capacity to give themselves to a higher quality of life than they have entertained in the past. And then they come into these principles which tell them, now you're not to live in time. They try to integrate that with their effort to lift people around them in spirit. And they find that when they succeed, the people are lifted. The problem was that they were doing it in time. Every time you live in time, your steps take a longer time to get there. 100 to 1. But the moment you are out of time yourself, your scope of operations changes completely. First of all, you have a wider radius to work in, and then you have an unusual acceptance of the non-reality of time, and that makes you move through space with a speed that is sometimes very amazing. You find you've done things before you realize it, and you don't know why, but you have not found time to be opposing you. It simply wasn't there. I don't know if you've had that experience, but it's worth cultivating. To realize that there's no time opposing you, except the time that you invent to oppose yourself. You can actually do in 1 minute what a person can do in an hour who's living in time. And you can't measure it in minutes, because when you're not in time, you're not measuring that way. The brain works immediately. It doesn't weigh things. It gets right to the crux of whatever it's about. You'll find that capacity to think very clearly, because when you're not in time, your thoughts are God's thoughts and they're not yours. God's computer is very different than yours. You find yourself thinking things you couldn't think of as a human being. and you'll find yourself discarding things that you would think of as a human being, which are of no point at all. You're only dealing with that which is a necessary part of living. If you're a scientist working on children, in some respects, some unknown quantities, and you find there's no reference material available on your subject, if you're able to live outside of time, you'll find that something which is not reference material, but which substitutes for it, which is the parent, in fact, of what the reference material is all about, you find you're right into the fact that you need to know. You're in the stage of maybe an invention. There's no reference material of any kind. But you are there with that kind of thought which is not human. And there are no walls to barricade itself. You find you get to the nub of the issue. You make take the mother out of difficulties in childbirth with new laws. You may take a man out of difficulties in certain substances that he's stuck with. Because all these substances only appear to be substances. They're made of attitudes of people. Whereas in the center of their being, there's no form, there's no matter. There's light, pure light. And when you get to the light of any subject, you've got what is there instead of what appears there. And this works swiftly. When you're working in the light, you're not in a human mind. You're not in human thought patterns. And the light can take you swiftly wherever you need go. If you're thinking from that level, that is not a thought level. That's a Christ level. You pierce whatever is necessary in an instant. Simply turn your attention to it. I'm trying to get to the point where we use what we do and then we see how it betters us and betters those around us. The inventor is not a man who follows in others' footsteps. He invents by means of stepping out of their footsteps. The inventive mind becomes the searching spirit. And then the searching spirit becomes the inner vision of the Father in all things you do. You are behind matter. And that's a good place to be, because the matter which men behold becomes a problem to them. They cannot find out its secrets. And somewhere along the line they're stuck. But when you work in the light, you are matter that has not become matter yet to men. Whoever works in the light works in the realm of the so-called human impossible. Things done in the light always take hundreds of years before they come into the material world of solidity. Every mystic who works in the light produces many activities which ultimately become human inventions. And if you're of an inventive mind in any phase of life, if you paint that way, if you do your crockery that way, if you do anything in the light, you find your speed is so much quicker, your depth of penetration so much deeper. You're working in cause rather than effect. Try to find your light before you go into the difficult subjects that must be understood, and your light will decipher them for you. Some people have this uncanny ability to do it. I suppose the people who live in that light are a rarity and can't be understood by human beings, but occasionally one finds his way into the human world, you might say Leonardo da Vinci type. The things he could see that could not be seen with the eyes were the things that made his inventions. As Eddie Casey, the things he could see when he was unconscious. There's a man who wrote a book, and he wrote about the incarnations of Jesus Christ. And he based it on I forget what Edgar Casey called it, but he had these moments when he saw this incarnation in various lifespans, and he was unconscious when he saw these things. He was living in the light, and he can tell you from the year zero to this present year what incarnation Jesus had, who he was, what he did, where he did it, and give you the name. And you'll find all of them have been listed in the Bible, so that he'll tell you that Jesus Christ was the man who handled the affairs for such and such a man in such and such a year. And you'll see that this man became famous because he was guided by Jesus Christ. But his name wasn't Jesus Christ then, it was a Latin name. And he'll go right down. The man's name of the writer was Hurst, H-U-R-S-T. There's a book out by him years ago, and it's the first chapter is every incarnation of Jesus Christ, at least 14 or 15. I find it very interesting to observe that something about this spirit was always serving men. For women, there was something about this spirit of Christ that was always in operation as an important position of value to a man or a community. until it ultimated in Jesus Christ's experience. I mention this fact because the people who we don't see, who serve, are always, as it were, underground. The actions that they take are not visible, not normal to us, not often are we aware of them, but they are always active in our life. And you may find that there are a number of such individuals who are active in your life unknown to you. And it's worth taking time to investigate. The way you do it is you go within for a period of time until something is established that is a little different than the outer personality. And then, when it is established, you ask it the questions you want it to know. And you might be surprised that its contacts in the inner universe are totally unknown to the outer universe until there is this inner questioning, and it will tell you that I serve this one and that one, and he's known as the spirit of so-and-so, and this one is the spirit of so-and-so. And as you do this, you find that a world is opening up that you hadn't suspected, a world that's very ready to help you. You're not just groveling on the outside. Don't forget, you've got an inner life. And it's there for a reason. It's very important. It's what your outer springs from. And it's a vast library. You can live in that. There was a man who served for many years. He was transplanted from one of the countries, it may have been Czechoslovakia, and he preceded some of our American people in the electrical industry. He knew things in his consciousness that nobody could know. He could lock things in his consciousness. He could lock a few textbooks in his consciousness and refer to them at all times, and did. He spoke to birds. He found out their secrets, and they gave him the information he wanted. He wasn't seeking anything in the world. But he was a force in our work. In the early days of electricity, a number of inventors borrowed from him. He had other ideas that were useful, but not followed up by men. An uneducated man with more knowledge of electricity than any man on the earth. And it wasn't book learning. He got his learning from electricity. He could build a complete plant with the information he gathered from within. I'm saying that there are depths of knowledge which are ready to be probed and can only be probed by one who does not live in the material world completely. But one has to look deeper inside oneself to find that connection between his inner self and the invisible world. It's there. It's waiting to be connected up. And it's waiting to feed you all kinds of information. In our world, we find that Jesus was one of the foremost exponents of that. Nothing he did in the visible world was not done first in the invisible world. Does that give you a clue as to what you can do? If you rely on what you know, you're stuck with the visible world. And when you know that the invisible world born of spiritual understanding contains the power that is behind the seed of the flower, the power that is behind all of the visible motion, the power that moves the universe, the power that is in the universe that will remain here when all the visible power disappears. It is here now. And we can tap it. We can tap it to perform miracles we would never dream exist. Someone is going to tap these miracles and will be flying in the sky without an airplane. Someone will tap these miracles and will be talking without a wire. Why? Because spirit is always in touch with itself. Spirit in Nova Scotia is spirit in Ireland. Spirit is one. Spirit is in touch with itself instantaneously. And when you are one with spirit, any part of your being can send information to any part of your being wherever you are. And there is no limitation to where you are. I'm trying to loosen up the material world around us and not see it as it's seen. A world is concealed, an infinite world, a world that is not concealed to one who has not formed material concepts. A world that welcomes you because it's the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And the kingdom has four dimensions. That fourth is the one we're looking for. We know about three. In that fourth dimension, spirit lives. In that fourth dimension, your spirit moves outside of the normal boundaries of your world It widens you, deepens you in every possible way. And no matter how far you go, there's still further to go, because it is endless. No matter how long you live, there's still further to live, because that is eternal. When you pass from age to agelessness, you will do it through the Spirit. That's why it's so important that we do not take Spirit for granted, but we experiment and try to get inside. We're going to find some secrets that open things up and teach us. Perhaps we should look closely now at what Jesus Christ achieved during his lifetime. We're going to have to just work with one span of 2,000 years. We'll forget that he lived before then. He probably did more before then than after then. But we'll dwell with the last 2,000. Where was the world before Jesus? Where did it go after Jesus? What influence was he? Did he change our way of living, our way of thinking? Did he change what we can accomplish?